नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्. For reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, let us offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of God and Lord Narayan, unto Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author, and unto Srila Prabhupada, who is a translator, commentator, and our spiritual master. Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavata Tamashloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. By regularly attending the Srimad Bhagavatam class and by rendering service unto the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving devotional service unto the personality of Godhead, whose worship with transcendental songs becomes established as an irrevocable fact. So we're concluding today. This is fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 26, and today we're on the last verse, text 40. Bhu Dvipa Varsha Sarid Adri Nabaha Samudra Patala Din Naraka Bhagana Loka Sangsta Gita Maya Tava Ripadbhutam Ishvarasya Shtulam Vapuhu Sakala Jiva Nikaya Dhamma. So this appears to be the Brahma Samhita meter, so let's try that. Bhudvipa Varsha Saridadri Nabak Samudra. Patala din naraka bhagana loka sangsta. Gita maya tava nipad bhutam ishvarasya. Stulang vapoksa kala jiva nikaya dhamma. Okay, boo. Of this planet Earth, Dvipa, and other different planetary systems, Varsha, of tracts of land, Sarit, rivers, Adri, mountains, Navaha, the sky, Samudra, oceans, Patala, lower planets, Dik, directions, Naraka, the hellish planets, Pagana Loka, the luminaries and higher planets, Sangsta, the situation, Gita, described, Maya, by me, Tava, for you, Nuripa, O King, Adbhutam, wonderful. Ishvarasya, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Stulam, gross. Vapuhu, body. Sakala Jiva Nikaya, of all the masses of living entities. Dhamma, which is the place of repose. So, Srila Prabhupada's translation for this verse. My dear King, I have now described for you this planet Earth, other planetary systems, and their lands, varshas, rivers, and mountains. I have also described the sky, the oceans, the lower planetary systems, the directions, the hellish planetary systems, and the stars. Jaya Panchatat. These constitute the Virat Rupa, the gigantic material form of the Lord, on which all living entities repose. Thus I have explained the wonderful expanse of the external body of the Lord. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 5th canto, 26th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled A Description of the Hellish Planets. Now, there are some notes from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, even though Prabhupada did not write a purport, they're written here, so I will read these. There is a supplementary note written by His Divine Grace Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada in his Gaudiya Bhashya. Its translation is as follows. Learned scholars who have full knowledge of all the Vedic scriptures agree that the incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are innumerable. These incarnations are classified into two divisions called Prabhava and Vaibhava. According to the scriptures, Prabhava incarnations are also classified in two divisions, those which are called eternal and those which are not vividly described. In this 5th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in chapters 3 through 6, there is a description of Rishabhadev, but there is not an expanded description of his spiritual activities. Therefore, he is considered to belong to the second group of Prabhava incarnations. In Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st canto, chapter 3, verse 13, it is said, Ashtame Meridevyam tu nabhir jata urukramaha darshayan vartvantiranam sarvashrama namaskritam, which translates as, Lord Vishnu appeared in the 8th incarnation as the son of Maharaj Nabi, the son of Agnidra, and his wife Meru Devi. He showed the path of perfection, the Paramahamsa stage of life, which is worshipped by all the followers of Varnashram Dharma. Rishabhadeva is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his body is spiritual, Satchidananda Vigraha. Therefore, one might ask how it might be possible that he passed stool and urine. The Gaudiya Vedanta Acharya Baladeva Vidyabhushana has replied to this question in his book known as Siddhanta Ratna, first portion, text 65 through 68. Imperfect men call attention to Rishabhadeva's passing stool and urine as a subject matter for the study of non-devotees who do not understand the spiritual position of a transcendental body. In this 5th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, canto 5, chapter 6, text 11, the illusioned and bewildered state of the materialists of this age is fully described. Elsewhere, in the 5th canto, 5519, Rishabhadeva stated, Idam shariram mama durvibhavyam. This body of mine is inconceivable for materialists. This is also confirmed by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, text 11. Avajanantimang mudha manasham tanamashitam parambhavam ajananto mama bhuta maheshwaram. Translation, fools deride me when I descend in a human form. They do not know my transcendental nature and my supreme dominion over all that be. Continuing, the human form of the Supreme Personality of God, it is extremely difficult to understand, and in fact, for a common man, it is inconceivable. Therefore, Rishabhadeva has directly explained that his own body belongs to the spiritual platform. This being so, Rishabhadeva did not actually pass stool and urine. Even though he superficially seemed to pass stool and urine, that was also transcendental and cannot be imitated by any common man. It is also stated in Srimad Bhagavatam that the stool and urine of Rishabhadeva were full of transcendental fragrance. One may imitate Rishabhadeva, but he cannot imitate him by passing stool that is fragrant. The activities of Rishabhadeva, therefore, do not support the claims of a certain class of men known as Arhat, who sometimes advertise that they are followers of Rishabhadeva. How can they be followers of Rishabhadeva while they act against the Vedic principles? Shukadeva Goswami has related that after hearing about the characteristics of Lord Rishabhadeva, the king of Kanka, Venka, and Kutaka initiated a system of religious principles known as Arhat. These principles were not in accord with Vedic principles, and therefore they are called Pashanda Dharma. The members of the Arhat community considered Rishabhadeva's activities material. However, Rishabhadeva is an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, he is on the transcendental platform, and no one can compare to him. Rishabhadeva personally exhibited the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 5.6.8, Dabanalas tadvanam alelihana sahatena dadhaha. At the conclusion of Rishabhadeva's pastimes, an entire forest and the Lord's body were burned to ashes in a great forest fire. In the same way, Rishabhadeva burned people's ignorance to ashes. He exhibited the characteristics of a Paramahamsa in his instructions to his sons. The principles of the Arhat community, however, do not correspond to the teachings of Rishabhadeva. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushana remarks that in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam there is another description of Rishabhadev, but that Rishabhadev is different from the one described in this canto. This is the end of the 5th canto, so tomorrow Maharaj will start the 6th canto. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Nityanamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavani Paschatadeshtarine Om Agyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unvilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtang Sapitang Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeyaham Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavangsha Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Ragana Tanvitam Tang Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitangsha He Krishna Karana Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesh Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Haripriya Vancha Kompaturvyasha Kripa Sindhuva Evacha Patitanang Pavanevyo Vaishavevyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Dittananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasati Gaurabhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So we should relish our good fortune in hearing this Bhagavad philosophy in a pure disciplic succession. Therefore, we avoid the kind of mistakes that are mentioned here. This Arhat community, who they claim to be followers of Lord Rishabhadev, but they have concocted some ideas based on their misunderstanding that Lord Rishabhadev is a material person. So we are very fortunate, again, hearing from His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, we have avoided all of these pitfalls, because we're getting the absolute truth as it is. Bhagavad Gita, as it is. Srimad Bhagavatam, as it is. Chaitanya Charitamrita, as it is. Everything as it is, so we don't have to speculate, wonder, just have to hear from Prabhupada and repeat what he's told us. Very fortunate, for instance, we have understanding that the lotus feet of the Lord are eternal. So this is another proof from our perspective that the materialistic scientists are incorrect. They will tell you that, for instance, the fish evolved over millions of years. You start from dull matter, and some or other it combines to form simple living entities, and they evolve, and eventually you get a fish. But we look at the lotus feet of Krishna and Radha. There's a fish there. That means the fish form is eternal. Krishna's feet are eternal. Radharani's feet are eternal. All these symbols on their feet are eternal symbols. They're not some evolved symbol. So the fish form is an eternal form. It's not something that evolved over time. The bow is an eternal form. The flag, the Ankusha, which is the elephant goat, that is an eternal form. These are all eternal forms. The conch shell. These are not things that evolved over time. Somehow or other. I like to poke fun at them because they poke fun at religionists saying that you simply believe in God. You can't prove God's existence. But they believe that life came from matter. They can't prove it. They cannot prove that life came from matter. They believe. So it's another kind of religion. It's a religious fervor. We believe life came from matter, and based on that, we think that fish evolved at a certain point in time, and the horse form and the elephant form. These are eternal forms. We look again at the lotus feet of the Lord and His eternal consort. Their lotus feet are eternal. They're not material creations. So every single symbol that you see there on those lotus feet, those are eternal forms. They're not something that evolved. And just goes to show you again how important is that fish form. It's stated that our material minds are like fish. You know, the fish are always swimming, and so our minds are like that, materially contaminated mind, always going here, there, everywhere. But if we meditate on the fish, on the lotus feet of Krishna, Radharani, Lord Nityananda, the fish form is there on Lord Nityananda's feet also. If you meditate on that fish, then your mind becomes calm. It stops wandering everywhere. By meditation on these fish, your mind becomes calm. So again, these are all eternal forms, not something materially produced. Umbrella. Somebody will claim that they invented the umbrella at a certain point in time, but we see on the lotus feet of Krishna, there's an umbrella. So it's an eternal manifestation. It's not something that modern man invented at some point in time. No, umbrella is an eternal manifestation. The flag, the lotus flower, the conch shell, these are all eternal forms. And if we meditate on those forms on the lotus feet of the Lord and the lotus feet of His eternal consort Radharani, then our devotion becomes stronger, our minds become fixed, and we become more and more convinced that they're real. They're not concoctions like the BBC would have us believe. They still, to this day, the English, the British, they went to India and they came across a more sophisticated philosophy than they had. So they had to systematically try to debunk it. When they came across the Vedic knowledge, what did they have? The Bible and some, you know, ruminations of some so-called philosophers and scholars. Nothing to compare to the Vedic literature. So they systematically tried to convince the Indians themselves that this is all just mythology and it's just... So they took the young Indians and they educated them in the European style of education and convinced them that this Vedic so-called, it's just all mythology. And they're still trying to do that. Recently, not so long ago, maybe a year or so ago, I saw a documentary made by the BBC with this Richard Attenborough. And they were investigating the origins of this Soma, because in the Vedas mentioned that the demigods, they drink the Soma Rasa. So they were trying to understand the origins of the Soma Rasa. So they went to Himalayas and supposedly discovered there's some bush there that is called Soma, and it's slightly intoxicating. You know, you make a tea from it and you drink it and you get slightly intoxicated. So they said, oh, this is what happened. These so-called sages of the Vedic age, they were drinking this intoxicating beverage from the Himalayas, and then they sat around in their trance and they were writing something. They're still trying to make us believe that the Vedas are not real, because it's a challenge to their lifestyle. It's not just a challenge, it's a slap in the face to their lifestyle of anything goes. So this is not the case. Anything does not go. Yes, you can try to do anything you want to do, but there are repercussions. There's price to pay for everything that we do. So this fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam is convincing us of that price. In the fifth canto here, Shukadeva Goswami has mentioned 28 different hellish planetary systems that the sinful living entities can be sent to. Beginning with Rurava, Maharurava, we have mentioned some of them, Kumipaka, Krimi Bhojana, and these are not nice places. Not nice places. We don't want to go back there. So, being a soft-hearted devotee, Maharaj Pariksit will ask, then how can people avoid going to hell? And this is where the sixth canto comes in, starts in with the first chapter. Shukadeva Goswami is going to reply. First of all, he tells him about, you know, prayaschitta, about performing pious activities to counteract your sinful activities. But Maharaj Pariksit, being a very intelligent devotee, he rejects that. He says, no, this is like kunjara socha. This is like the bathing of an elephant. The elephant goes into a lake or a river, body of water, washes very nicely, and when they come out, immediately they take dust and throw all over the body. So he says, this prayaschitta, this atonement is just like that. It's like kunjara socha. It's like the bathing. So then, Shukadeva Goswami goes on to eventually describe the life of Ajamil. How important the chanting of the heart of Hare Krishna is, the chanting of the holy names. How that is the best thing to do to counteract. Now, ultimately, we should not chant to counteract sinful activities, because we should stop committing sins once we start chanting. So, in the first canto, first chapter, there's this nice verse, Apanak Sangsutin Ghoram Yannama Vishoginam Tatak Sadyo Vimucheta Yadbibeti Swayam Payam. That living entities, living beings who are entangled in the complicated meshes of birth and death can be freed immediately by even unconsciously chanting the holy name of Krishna, which is feared by fear personified. So this is the benefit of chanting the holy name of Krishna. Even fear personified runs in fear. That means if we take shelter of the holy name, then we are completely protected. We don't have to be afraid of anything or anyone. Just like Prahlad Maharaj. 5-year-old boy. He didn't have any strength to stand up against his father in a fight. No, he just took shelter of the holy name and just kept chanting. And his father became so disturbed that he wanted to kill him. He ordered his henchmen to kill him. And he tried in so many ways. Throw him off a cliff, put him in a pot of boiling oil and snakes and put him on the feet of elephants, and they could not kill him. So Prabhupada once said, if you're the greatest demon that ever lived, Hiranyakashipu, and you can't kill your own 5-year-old son, then who's going to be afraid of you? You cannot kill a five-year-old boy. How are anybody going to be afraid of you anymore? So he really was upset. He really wanted to kill him just to prove that he could do it. So finally, when all of those methods failed, he said, called him and said, "Where are you getting this power from to resist me?" And Prahlad told him, "Same place you get your power, from Lord Vishnu." Then he became really upset. "I'm going to kill you today. You keep worshipping Vishnu instead of me." So as we know the story, Lord Srinadeva appeared and saved them. So if we just take shelter of the holy name of Krishna, we have nothing to fear. Now in the purport to that verse, Apanak Sanskritim Gaurang Prabhupada says that yes, if you unconsciously even chant Hare Krishna, you will be saved. But there's a codicil, there's a but there. But you cannot commit sinful activities knowingly. He said if you unknowingly you commit some sinful activities, you will be forgiven. But if you start chanting and you knowingly commit sinful activities, I'm chanting, I'm going to break the principles, and then I'll just pick up my beads again and start chanting, I'll be protected. No. Prabhupada said, no. You will be punished if you do that. He said, the punishment is you'll take birth as cats and dogs. Prabhupada stated that once in Vrindavan, and the Brijbasis were very upset because deep down they know it's true. Prabhupada said, these people who come to Vrindavan and they're living in the holy land of Vrindavan, but they commit sinful activities, illicit sex, they're going to take birth one lifetime as cat, dog, jai, Sri Panchatattva. Confirmed. They will take one life, one birth as cat or dog, hog in Vrindavan, and then they will go back to God. So many of the local Brijbasis, they were very upset that Prabhupada said that. But this is the fact. It's not that you have a free ride just because you live in Vrindavan, you can do anything. Just because I'm chanting Hare Krishna, I can do anything. No. Once Prabhupada said, why is India in such a poverty-stricken state? He said, because they have this knowledge. They've had this knowledge since time immemorial, and they didn't use it properly. And therefore, those who know and don't act, they get punished more than those who don't know. See, if you don't know something, if you're a little bit innocent, ignorant, you can be forgiven. But if you know, if you willingly break the law, you know what the law is, and you're willing to, of course, you can be punished even if you don't know. Because you should try to know. This is what human life is meant for. Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Understanding what are my responsibilities, what are my duties, what should I do, what should I not do. That's human consciousness. So if one doesn't attain that consciousness, who am I, where did I come from, what am I supposed to do with my life? If one does not attain that consciousness, then one is not actually human. One is still on the animal platform. Clearly stated in the Shastra. Ahara nidra bayamaitadam cha samayana etat pashabi samana. Dharma hitesho adikam vishesho dharmena hina pashabi naranam. So, ahara means
eating.
Ahara nidra
sleeping.
Baya
fearing.
Maitadam. Sex life. So ahara, nidra, baya, maitanam. So eating, sleeping, fearing, and sex life are common to the animals and human beings. So what distinguishes a human being from an animal? Dharma hitesho adiko vishesho. That if you take to the path of dharma, religiosity, real, not manufactured, then you are considered a human being. So human beings have to have some form of religion. Otherwise they remain animals. They simply eat, sleep, mate, and defend. And there's a price to pay for that, because eating means you're going to commit sinful activities. You're going to kill. If you eat the animals, it's obvious. The animal has a right to live a natural life and die a natural death, just like we do. So if you slaughter animals and eat them, you're going to be slaughtered in response. But even the vegetarian, the vegan, inevitably in procuring your vegetarian, vegan foodstuff, some animals, insects, they're going to die. And what to speak of when you cook, you light fire, some living entities die. So no matter how carefully we try to live on this planet, we're walking down the street, we're going to step on some unseen living entities. So everybody's accruing some sinful reactions that they have to suffer in the future. And that's why Krishna says, Ahang tuang sarvapapi mokshashyami. Even to the devotees, we accrue something that would give us some sinful reactions. But if we surrender to Krishna, if we're always on a Krishna mission, then we are forgiven. Krishna will absolve us of that. And that includes, again, eating. Many times devotees become so advanced, so sophisticated, that they just go to the store and buy something and eat it. No! Krishna says, don't do that. Yogya shishta sinakshanta mujyante sabrakilbushai bundate te tagampapam ye pachantyatma karna. He says that the devotees of the Lord are relieved from sinful reactions because they offer whatever they eat in sacrifice. Those who eat just for the satisfaction of their tongue verily eat only sin. This is God speaking, not me, not Prabhupada. This is what Krishna, God himself, says. That you have to offer me everything. Sometimes we become so sophisticated. Oh, but it's just a banana. Yes, you have to offer it. Doesn't mean an elaborate offering. You have to get a big silver plate and a bell. No, but you have to at least make some attempt at offering your fruit before you eat it. Your milk, your whatever. It doesn't matter how simple. Krishna says, patram pushpam palam toyam. Right? Leaf, water, fruit, flower. Offer it to me and I'll accept it if you do it with love. So he mentions there the simplest forms. Leaf. You know, leaf I have to offer? Yes. Fruit I have to offer? Yes. Water? Yes. Krishna says, offer me your water before you drink it. So, and this is in this way we'll become more and more Krishna conscious. In the beginning we're motivated by fear, not to get any sinful reactions. But as we become more sophisticated, more advanced in devotional service, we offer things spontaneously out of love for the Lord, thankfulness, gratitude. And in this way, we avoid falling into this pit of eating just for the satisfaction of the tongue. Because Krishna says, if you do that, you're verily eating only sin. So even the simplest foodstuffs that we eat, we should offer it. It doesn't have to be, again, a very elaborate. If you're working outside and you buy something for lunch that was not yet offered, then you just sit down. You take out your iPhone, you bring up the picture of Guru. Prabhupada said, if you just recite prayers to the spiritual master, bas, offering complete. So who can't do that? Everybody here has a Guru. You get your banana or your whatever you're eating that day and you just take a few minutes to say prayers to the spiritual master. It's offered. Sankirtan devotees can do that. No matter how busy they are, driving from here to there, you can stop the van, put up a picture of Guru and Krishna, offer the banana and before you eat it. I spent most of my time in the BBT. I'm still serving the BBT in New York, in Los Angeles. But sometimes when things were not so busy, they would put us in vans and send us out on Sankirtan. And we were not, you know, we were office bodies. We're not so experienced. Anyway, my Sankirtan leader, when I would go out, was Vishnu Gada. And he was extremely austere. We heard rumors of other Sankirtan parties eating very sumptuous prasadam. But he was not like that. He would buy us paradise, tomatoes. He would buy some very, very simple, very, very simple fruit like that. We were eating very, very simply. So we would like hanker. We would hear these stories of other parties. They were having like feasts every day practically. But he was not like that. But he definitely offered it before we ate it. Definitely. I remember I was still a bhakta at that point, and he was already twice initiated, and he would take charge of buying the boga and making the offering and then feeding us. So it's like that. This is our heritage. Everything should be offered with love, gratitude to Krishna. But we should not be so eager to be so advanced that we don't offer anymore. No. No, that's not. We cannot imitate the Goswamis. But even they were offering. Sanatan Goswami was carrying Madan Mohan in a package wherever he went. And then he would hang him in a tree. And he would make simple prasadam. But as Prabhupada said, it was just wheat with water, rolled in a ball, put it on the fire for a few minutes. And then he would offer it. He didn't just make him and eat him. He offered it to Madan Mohan. And one day Madan Mohan said, Sanatan, can you at least give me a little salt? This is not very tasty. And Sanatan replied, I'm an old man. Today you want salt, tomorrow you want something else. Please just be satisfied. So we can't imitate that. We cannot imitate that level of devotion. We should make the nicest offering we can. Get the nicest boga we can. Make the nicest offering we can. And don't mistake the salt for sugar. We have to concentrate, in other words. Once in New Dorka, Prabhupada was there. And one Mataji made the Charanamrita, and she used salt instead of sugar. So Prabhupada came, they gave him Charan. Who has done this? Rascal. You have to concentrate. I remember they trained us when we had to help in the kitchen in Henry Street. They said, you have to concentrate. First of all, they made sure you had to cut each vegetable just perfectly, just the right size, carrot, you know, to make everything had to be done precisely. But concentrate. Don't cut your fingers. We don't want your blood in Krishna's sabji. So they train you, you have to concentrate. And that applies to all service. Whatever service we're doing for Krishna, cooking, cleaning, distributing books, writing, editing, whatever we're doing, we have to concentrate. It's an offering. It's supposed to be an offering of love to Krishna. So we have to concentrate to the best of our ability to do it nicely for Krishna's satisfaction. So anyway, we can stop here. Any questions, comments? I have a question. Bhakta Philip, where did you get that shirt? I'd like to get one. That's a nice t-shirt. And that's preaching. Just to go out in public wearing that t-shirt, because as that verse says, apanak sankshitim gaurang, if they just even unconsciously chant the holy name, they make progress. They don't become an animal in the next life. So when you walk around with a holy name t-shirt or anything like that, dressed like a Vaishnava, you're inducing them. Those who have already heard of the Hare Krishna, they think immediately, there goes the Hare Krishna. So they're thinking Hare Krishna. And those who have never heard of the Hare Krishna, they wonder, who is that? Why is he dressed like that? At least you invoke their curiosity. So, very important to go out dressed like Vaishnavas and Vaishnavis, wearing tilak. Why not? Why not? It doesn't cost us anything. And it has great impact on the public. I remember in 73, 74, when we would go out on Harinam in Henry Street, from Henry Street, we had what was called a step van. It's a cargo van. It used to be like a bread truck. So there were seats in front for the driver and one passenger, but the entire back was empty. And we would put so many devotees in. I don't know, 30, 40, 50 devotees would pack like this to go out on Harinam. And it was funny, when we would arrive, we would normally go to either the library, the main library in Manhattan, which is like 34th Street and 5th Avenue, or a little further west, we would go to Broadway and 34th Street, or Broadway and 42nd Street, actually. And so when the van would come up, I have noticed it many times, they would open the doors, and we would start coming out, and people would be like, so many devotees coming out, 10, 20, 30, 40. Nowadays, you can't do that. They're very strict about, if you ride in a vehicle, you have to have proper restraint and stuff. But in those days, the police were not so concerned about that. So as many as you could put in the van, and then we would pile out, just like, shh. So yeah, going out in the public and chanting, this is the Yoga Dharma for us, chanting Hare Krishna in public, congregational chanting especially, and we benefit by doing it. We get unlimited benefit from going out in the public and chanting, and the public benefits, because again, if they just hear the mantra once, they're saved. They're saved. We should not take it lightly, but hearing Krishna's holy name once in their lifetime promotes them to a higher level of existence. So we shouldn't be shy about doing it, and it's one of the reasons why I love to come to Ljubljana. I love the Harinam here, it's very nice. So, keep doing it. Jai. Rantirachimit Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaura Bhaktivedanta ki jai.